Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Who was Alan Turing?
I think he was a genius that laid the theoretical foundations for pretty much all the computing technologies we take for granted today.
I first heard about him in college with the Turing test, and it was a couple years later that I read The Cryptonomicon, and it was about a year or two after that that I realized that this character in a book was a real person.
Probably in high school and reading about World War II and the code breaking, I think the British effort in World War II that they kept secret for years made a huge difference, and he was, you know, a central figure in figuring out how to do that.
There were literally millions of different possible combinations for cracking this code. It was almost impossible to imagine that it could be done, but he succeeded in doing it. And it really had a huge impact in turning the tide of the war in favor of the British.
Frankly, if he would not have done that, I would postulate that this would be an entirely different world. Germany could have won the war, and who knows what the outcome would have been, but it would have been a different world.
So you have this amazing genius who also happened to be gay, and after World War II in the early 50s, the British government arrested Alan Turing because he was gay and eventually forced him to be chemically castrated, which left Turing a broken man, and he eventually took his own life.
Well, I think that one of the main reasons that some people are more familiar with Einstein or Galileo, the big names that anybody is aware of, is that they are easily able to point to tangible things that they invented. Whereas someone like Alan Turing, a lot of people can't really describe in completely simple, generic words what he did. He laid the foundation for so much, but it's hard to say light bulb, electricity, telephone.
One day, ladies will be walking their computers in the park and saying, "Do you know, my little computer said a very funny thing to me this morning."
The elevator pitch went something like this. I want to make a film about Alan Turing, one of the most important people of the last century, and most people have never heard of him, and those who have don't really know his story.
Alan Turing would have been 100 years old this year. He lived an extraordinary and tragic life. He was only 41 when he committed suicide, but he had already laid the foundations for the computer and artificial intelligence, and saved the Allies from the Nazis. Patrick Salmon's new film, Codebreaker, tells the other part of Alan Turing's story, what happened to him in 1952 when the British authorities learned that he was gay. Anne Strainchamps reached Patrick in New York.
Your film opens with a scene of Alan Turing in his psychologist's office. Of course, one of the difficult things right at the beginning is there's a great deal he can't actually say.
How do we do this?
We talk.
What do I have to say?
You don't have to say anything. But you should feel free to say whatever you like.
There are some things I can't say. Things you can't know about the war. Things you can't even think.
One of the absurd things about the way Turing was treated is that there was this Cold War paranoia at this time in the early 50s about the risk that so-called perverts would have in terms of being a threat to blackmail, and they wouldn't keep their secrets.
So what did you say to the police?
I told them I'd been having an affair with Arnold Murray and that he'd given my address to a young man who was known to burgle men he'd met for sex.
And you told the police that you had sex with Murray?
They asked me what we got up to.
I was just wondering, why would you say that to the police?
Can you tell the story of what happened that led to Alan Turing's arrest and the whole unraveling of his life?
Sure. In late 1951, Turing met a man on the street in Manchester, a man named Arnold Murray.
He looked hungry, so I bought him a meal. I gave him my address, and later he came to my home to see me. He spent the night. He was 19.
And they had a brief relationship over some number of weeks, or maybe a month or 6 weeks.
I think he stole from me a few pounds, but I couldn't be certain. I accused him. He became angry. I weakened. He spent the night again. This theme repeated itself throughout our acquaintance. And then one day I came home and found I'd been burgled.
And rather naively at this point, Turing goes to the police, and basically the police start asking questions. Turing explains the friendship he had with Murray, and they ask more questions, and in very short order, Turing confesses to the nature of the relationship with Arnold Murray. And so at that point, Turing's arrested.
The sentence he was given was appalling. And he was given a choice of prison or chemical castration, which is what he chose. What did that mean, chemical castration?
Turing was given a synthetic version of the female hormone estrogen. And what that would have done is it would have added that to his body, estrogen, but it also would have stopped the production of the male hormone, testosterone. As a result, Turing would have immediately become impotent, and he also would have lost his libido. He probably wouldn't have shaved anymore. The hair wouldn't have grown on his body. And also, he would have, over time, started to grow breasts. Turing's mind would have been affected. He would have been more distracted and not as focused. And in fact, Turing alludes to this in a letter to a friend at one point during the treatment, not knowing why he's unfocused and distracted.
Chemical castration, they call it. Very civilized. I take it every day, and once a month, I get tested at the hospital to make sure I don't have any of that naughty testosterone in my blood. It's meant to cure me of my desires.
That sounds like a form of torture. I mean, what was the point? Was the idea at the time that these physical changes would be permanent, that he'd be, quote-unquote, cured of homosexuality?
Well, the interesting thing is that this treatment was seen at the time as the progressive way to deal with this, quote, affliction. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people like Turing became guinea pigs, essentially, where these almost quack scientists, in hindsight, were testing their theories that somehow the changing the chemical makeup of someone's body and playing with their hormones could in some way get rid of this perversion. So it was seen almost as the compassionate way to deal with this situation, which simply couldn't be tolerated by society.
At what point do you think Turing began to think about suicide?
We know that in early 1954, Turing had a will made. And also, he had spoken with a friend on one occasion about considering suicide. So it's clearly something he was thinking about. There are some recent reports and theories that Turing may not have committed suicide, that it might have been an accident. And we don't think that there's any truth to that. The autopsy report indicates an amount of cyanide in his stomach that indicates that it was intentional rather than an accident.
And also the way he committed suicide, it's hard to imagine that being an accident. Wasn't he? It was found with an apple that he had dipped in cyanide?
What probably happened based on our research is that he ingested the cyanide and then bit the apple to sort of make the taste a little more palatable. He was fascinated with the Snow White story and poisoning the apple, and so it's natural that he would have done this in that way.
I've seen Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs 7 times. That's 49 times I've seen a dwarf. Do you ever wonder what poison she soaks the apple in? They don't say in the film. She'd have her pick. Poisons appear everywhere in nature. Some of the most beautiful flowers contain the deadliest poisons. Oleander, rhododendron, narcissus. Do you know what their poison did to me? We all worked to break Hitler, because what did he do, amongst other things? He sterilized Jews. Jews like you. We fought that bastard. We defeated him. And when we were finished, what did they do to me? And I'm supposed to allow it?
I think he felt that his world was closing in on him. He sort of just reached a breaking point. I think he may have even seen it as a last act of defiance.
This year marks the centennial of Alan Turing's birth. It's been the occasion for a petition drive. Hundreds, thousands of people have signed a petition asking the British government to issue a posthumous pardon. What's happened with that?
Well, it's gotten bogged down in the House of Lords, and basically the concern was that this would create a precedent where you have to provide posthumous pardons for similarly treated people. Because this is the important thing to keep in mind. Turing was not alone in the persecution he suffered because he was gay. There were thousands and maybe tens of thousands of men who suffered similar treatment in terms of being arrested.
Well, maybe they all deserve posthumous pardons.
So yes, they may all deserve posthumous pardons. But on the one hand, it doesn't change anything. I mean, the fact is this great injustice happened to Turing. And the government in 2009 recognized that with an apology to Turing and his family, a formal apology from the Prime Minister. Quite frankly, a better tribute, which I've heard another petition, is to get Turing on the £10 note. And that might be a better way to, again, remind the average person in England every time they open their wallet, aside from the iPhone they might have in one pocket, the £10 note might remind them of Turing. At the end of the day, it would be nice if they pardoned Turing, but it's still an injustice. It's still a tragedy. It's still a loss. And none of that will be repaired with a pardon.
Patrick Salmon's film Codebreaker will be in select theaters this fall and on cable later this year. While you're waiting, you can watch the trailer on our website at ttbook.org.